It has been a month since the teleporter accident that occurred at the beginning of the season. An accident that has had the side effect of switching the Sasha from our dimension with that of one where the Rangers are much different. The Sasha now residing in our dimension is scared, worried, paranoid, and is doing her best to blend in, trying to figure out what those that she perceives as her kidnappers want with her. Let us see how it is going.
Damn it!
Temper, Michael.
Yeah, relax. You're only losing 10-3. That's one touchdown. 2-point conversion, you're golden.
Brian, this is a hockey game.
Oh.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Ben!
What's going on, Ben?
Let's worry more about what's going in, Ben. Coffee on?
Yeah, just brewed a fresh pot.
Long night, Brian?
Yeah, I've been trying to figure out what caused the teleporter explosion. I completely ruled out the Putron theory, and it doesn't seem to be an issue with the particle retention systems.
Have you checked the light frequency analyzer?
No. How did you know about that?
You would not believe some of the things you talk about in your sleep, my dude. The other night, you passed out on the couch and recited your grandmother's recipe for gumbo.
Yeah, plus the night before the explosion, you were rattling on about all kinds of things.
You frequently name all kinds of doohickeys and thingamawatsits while catching dream time.
Yeah, the night before the explosion, you jabbered on about the light frequency analyzer and refracted transmitter lens. And something called a critical burst portal, or I think.
Wait, did you say the critical I've just had an idea. Excuse me.
Whoa, hold your horses there, Brian. Before you lock yourself in your lab for hours on end, we have an episode to record. So get prepared and head for the studio.
I've been looking forward to this one.
Ah, of course you have. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Voices from the Grid as we continue our journey through Season 2 of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And we're just going to start off right now. It's like, hey, it's me. It's the Green Ranger. It's Mike. And as always, we have our Red Ranger, Sasha Kaplan.
The one, the only, the ever snarky.
And then we have our Blue Ranger, Brian Massey.
Hey, everybody, what's going on?
And our Black Ranger, Ben Taylor.
Unlike every other Black Ranger that we've had so far, my thing isn't dancing.
We've only had one Black Ranger so far.
Yes, and we're about to have another major character of color introduced in this arc, and their thing's dancing too.
We're not there yet.
Yep. So with that, we're actually going to be taking, we're going to be tackling Green No More Part 1 and 2 as we get rid of Tommy for now. So we're going to hop right into it. I'm going to let Ben take another deep breath real quick. All right. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, it is now everyone's favorite moment in my mind, or segment in my mind. It's the quick run through of Green No More parts 1 and 2. We begin the episode when we see Tommy and Kim talking about how Tommy is near the end of his powers. Lightning strikes, and a Tommy from the future gives Tommy and Kim a message. Back at Angel Grove High, there be breakdancing happening. Billy, Zach, and Tommy speak about Tommy's...
90s racism.
Yep. Speak about Tommy's conundrum. Bulk and Skull get bullied by 5 new bullies, and they have a face-off with Zach, Billy, and Tommy. Zed is impressed with the 5 new bullies and wants them as his Dark Rangers. Zordon gives Tommy the bad news about his powers and that he has 1 battle left. At the beach, Billy, Zach, Kim, and Jason encounter the 5 new bullies. Zed sends the 5 bullies to his evil playland underworld. Zed creates Turban Shell. At the command center, the Rangers see the monster on the globe. Trini arrives a little bit later. The Rangers then morph into battle once she arrives. They instantly go into Megazord mode, and the Dragonzord comes out as well. The Zord battle ensues with Turban Shell, and the Rangers are knocked out of the Thunder Megazord. Turban Shell returns to Zed and gets reamed for it. Tommy is transported to a random field in the other world. Tommy then takes on Turban Shell by himself and loses his powers. With Tommy's powers, Zed blocks out Zordon and transports the Rangers to the other world. And here come the Dark Rangers, the worst-looking after-school rejects money can buy. The Rangers try to talk sense into the Dark Rangers, but they refuse to listen. Then in part 2, we're back in the field where Tommy encounters the monster, and damn can Tommy run fast. At the command center, Alpha is having difficulty breaking Zed's power hold. And then back at the other world, Zed sends the Rangers back to Angel Grove Park. They head to Billy's lab to see if they can break through to Zordon. Goldar sends Turban Shell back to Zed to take on Tommy. Goldar making Tommy look at his past self as the Green Ranger and all of his accomplishments and failures. At Billy's, he thinks he can get through Zed's force field, to which then we go back at the field. Tommy brings the fight to Goldar. Tommy uses the device from Goldar to do a time warp to get a new communicator to teleport to the others. Alpha contacts the Rangers and tells them that a non-Ranger can only get into Zed's dimension to destroy the crystal. Alpha transports Tommy over to Zed and the Dark Rangers and gets the crystal. Tommy then destroys the crystal and the Dark Rangers unmorph and teleport away. The team morphs back into action, and it's Thunder Megazord time. However, Turban Shell causes the Thunder Megazord to disband. Zordon tells Tommy to attack from within the monster, and Zach then freezes the monster, and then the Thunder Megazord reforms for the victory. Back at the youth center, the Rangers make peace with the 5 bullies, and at the command center, Tommy no longer has powers, but is grateful to have been a Power Ranger. And that is Green No More, parts 1 and 2.
All right.
What's our opening question, Mike?
Our opening question is, how did you like the writing for this one compared to the Mutiny's 3-parter?
It was way better. There were some really nice moments in this one. Which I will flag up as we talk about them. Brian?
My thoughts on this?
Yeah, what are your thoughts on the writing?
I thought that I agree with you. It was definitely better than the Mutiny. This was kind of like the Green Candle in that it was supposed to be it was literally supposed to be bring an end to Tommy's time on the show. And it turns out that he was so popular that they were originally going to get a guy named Brad Hawkins, better known as Riot Steel and VR Troopers, to be the new White Ranger. But, you know, I guess kids wrote in so much after this episode and were like, please don't let him go. That's what wound up happening. I like this episode. Not my favorite. There are some things I did point out in here, but yeah, overall, a pretty solid 2-parter, I think.
I don't think it's as solid as all that. I think I agree with Sasha. but there are pockets in here that that show a maturity in writing.
Yeah.
Whether they're intentional or otherwise. And I doubt they are intentional, to be honest.
They're probably not.
Yeah.
And honestly, this should have been just like our opening episode, this should have been a one-parter. Like, you can cut away the whole Dark Ranger BS.
Yeah.
Because they do nothing. They literally do nothing.
I actually disagree.
Well, other than the whole, the energy from the green crystal is used to power them up, thus draining Tommy's ability. But you could have done that with literally any generic monster.
There is a moment that we'll talk about when it comes up that is one of the best nuanced moments in Power Rangers in the first three seasons. And it happens in this episode.
Bold statement. I am intrigued. I guess we will get there when we get there. I will say that Zed's plot is, like Brian said, it's kind of similar to the Green Candle. The point is to get rid of Tommy and like drain the last remnants of his powers. I guess now we've moved on from candles to crystals.
Yep.
So all right then. I think it's interesting that like the villain characters, this isn't like Rita, where we had a rogues gallery, we had, you know, Finster, we had Babu and Squawk, we had like, and then Goldar and Scorpina. Here you just pretty much have Zordon, I mean, Lord Zed.
Same thing.
Goldar, yeah, pretty much. You have Zed, and then you have Goldar, and then you have the Monster of the Week. And speaking of the Monster of the Week, where are we then?
I'm still at the beginning.
Okay. If we're at the beginning, then let's talk about Zach's cousin that I don't think is ever mentioned.
I'm even before that. Like, because I need to mention it, because when Mike and I recorded the Green Candle episode, right, I was very critical of the scene that came after Tommy lost his powers and, like, Kim goes to see him. Mm. And he's basically not that bothered. He's just doing Tai Chi by the lake. And there's no real acting out of him and feeling of loss or introspection, right? Whereas here, that first scene where he's playing basketball, you actually get a sense of him being introspective and not wanting to lose his powers, right? Which you didn't get the last time. So I needed to flag that because I was critical about it before, right?
That makes sense.
I also like that they set up this weird time loop with communicator and all that, but you never see them close the loop. Because you see this message being, in the final battle, communicator, that's all I can tell you, blah, 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 blah. And then you never see him go back to give that message. Right? That's not how science works.
I guess it depends on the multiple theories of time travel you subscribe by.
If you don't set up a time loop that you tells also, you...
But on the,
if you do something that causes you to alter your actions in the future and you don't go back to make that thing happen, that's a paradox.
On the other hand, do we know for sure that this is the place where Tommy makes that recording from in the time stream?
Because you can tell by what he's wearing.
Oh, come on. He wears that same outfit like five times.
The very same sweat stains on his outfit.
I mean, they kind of imply it, and you're right, but you could theoretically suggest that this is something that happens later in the series.
Leaves the time thing behind when he teleports out.
Okay, then yeah, he's just a dummy. Ha, I stopped myself this time.
How am I not the one swearing here? This is a Tommy episode.
Again, I'm still writing off the like Deadpool episodes we have recorded at this point.
Like, I will say, like, I saw that and part of me was like, did they just do the Batman v Superman, like Lois is the key scene, like 20 years earlier.
Pretty much.
With the Flash. Like,
as, long
I was like,
as long as they aren't saying Martha. Then we have the introduction of Zach's cousin, Curtis.
And he knows how to moonwalk.
Who, much like Zach, is a one-dimensional dancer.
Oh, also, I have to ask a question about, like, the beginning sequence of this at the school. Is this a new year?
Yes.
Okay. Because otherwise, I was very confused about why there's all of a sudden a whole slew of new kids. Like, did the next neighborhood over from Angel Grove, like, the next town over from Angel Grove get destroyed? And, yeah, like, all of these kids suddenly had to move to Angel Grove?
Yeah, see, when they really meant to attack the, when the piranha monster and the mutiny went to have the Zords attack the dirt bike race, they really attacked the town over by accident. Yeah.
The implication is that every season of Mighty Morphin is a year of high school.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, because we do see them finally graduate, so.
Well, I mean, yeah. And that's kind of the premise of why they had to leave in Turbo.
Yeah.
So.
Which
that's like five years, though.
And we will get there when we get there.
Yeah.
I like the idea of, like, Zach. Well, the part where I got confused was, like, they specifically state that Zach's cousin moved from out of town. Like, yes, if he moved here, clearly he moved here from some other part of either the town.
They also say that about Richie and the new kids.
Yeah.
The new Rangers.
Yeah. So it's very confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially the fact that, like, at this point now, they're really trying to force Richie in a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Richie and Curtis were there to be, like, red herrings for the White Ranger, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Because what we haven't mentioned so far is Green No More is the culmination of a 7-episode arc that started with the Green Dream, which was where Zed gets his hate on for Tommy. He's like, I'm going to end that guy, right? Bonus points for Zed. So this is like the culmination of that. And they've been very slowly, because we're only like 3 episodes away from the introduction of the White Ranger, right?
Yeah.
Which is no time at all in Power Rangers, right? So it is worth noting that they are really putting the hard T's on introducing new characters so that when the White Ranger is introduced, there's some question as to who it could be, right?
Yeah.
The difference being, after the White Ranger, Curtis sticks around for like 1 or 2 more episodes, but Richie is dropped quicker than a pair of drawers in Thailand.
Yeah, because the original plan was for it to be Richie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the original plan was to have Richie become the White Ranger. It's why they're actually also, in a way, making it where Trini was always having interest in him.
Hmm. The personalityless, talentless, pretty boy.
One-dimensional lad.
Well, and part of the problem is,
I mean, they got the same thing with Jason David Frank.
But the thing is that they didn't really give Richie much, or Maurice Mendoza, who's the actor who played Richie, they didn't really give him much to work with either. They kind of just put him there for,
like, the normal teenage human.
Yeah, like, I think the most amount of dialogue was with Curtis saying, hey, I'll show you the juice bar, I'll show you around because I'm new too. And then, like, in a later episode,
I have a note about this, in fact. There is a conversation here between Richie and Curtis where Billy goes, Richie here is new in town too. And Curtis turns to Richie and goes, then you must know all the cool hangouts in town. Let's go. And
that was like, such
he's new. How does he know anything?
And he literally explains, like, oh no, I don't actually know anything yet, but we can talk about it over lunch.
I know about the youth center. I'll take you to the juice bar. Yeah. So, like, he at least knows the one place.
That was weird. But there's parts of this episode that are very weird. It's like the writers, I mean, it's very obvious the writers did not know what normal teenagers are like, and this is just reinforcing that, which we already knew, because the next thing that happens is Bulk and Skull are running across the hall, or excuse me, they're rolling across the hall.
Having been put in dumpsters.
Having been put in these barrel-looking dumpsters by, I guess, bullies that are supposed to be worse than Bulk and Skull.
We're like 20 Evil Ranger stories into Power Rangers at this point, right?
Two. If you count Tommy as one.
Technically three, because Billy was under like a spell evil at one
Billy,
point.
Like Billy turns evil in one episode and like...
Oh, he turns into a punk. That's not the same thing.
And then there's the Power Ranger punks, and then there's... Like we're talking the they go to the Evil Ranger well a lot,
which only makes sense when they do it later on. It becomes better.
And this is the moment I wanted to talk about with these new five teens. That was an excellently nuanced moment. And I'm 900% sure it was utterly unintentional, right? And there's this really interesting moment when after Bulk and Skull have gotten out of the canisters, and the five new teens walk up and like intimidate Bulk and Skull. Zach has this moment. He's like, "I'm gonna kill these people," right? And it's this moment of like they dare to pick on Bulk and Skull.
That's my job.
That's exactly what I was saying. It's this moment of wait, you don't pick on Bulk and Skull. I pick on Bulk and Skull. Like there's, it's just this one movement of Zach getting ready to move forward to just jump to Bulk and Skull's defense. Right? It's a really nice, nuanced moment that I'm absolutely sure was unintentional. But it's juicy. Brian, yeah. You're being very quiet.
No, I'm listening.
Yes, that's the definition of quiet. Do you have anything to say?
I honestly, I was kind of hoping if they were going to introduce a new group like that, that they were going to do something like that. And obviously, we didn't get that until like in space with like, you know, the Psycho Rangers. Which I don't know, like I kind of looked at those suits and I was like, could they have done anything a little better than that? Because like
we'll get to the suits. We're still at the point where they're in the high school meet.
Because keep in mind only Billy, Tommy, and Zach have met these five new bullies.
Yeah,
at this point the others haven't met them yet.
Well, they meet them shortly thereafter.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
I would say to anybody who's trying to get into acting, and let's say that you're going to do a bully role, don't watch this and go, this is what I need to do, because it comes off so just like, oh my God. You think that like Bulk and Skull are like really bad bullies, which we've gone into discussion how they're not really bullies, but that. These guys, they're just buttholes. Like and they're not even like good buttholes. And I think the guy that was wearing blue, I swear, he looked like, where's my note here? He looked to me, sorry, my tab is messing up here. He looked like a young John Oliver with a Flock of Seagulls haircut, yeah. Trying to be tough. And I was like, who are you? Like, but I do wish that like, maybe they had gone somewhere else with these guys. Obviously, like, at the end, I'm not going to spoil what happens at the end, but like, I was like, okay, cool, that's great. We're never going to see these guys again, are we?
Yep.
That's the Power Ranger way.
Love the fact that he's like, there's this magic green crystal. And I've got, there's now a magic green crystal. First, there's a candle. Now it's a crystal. Yep. What's next? Mm-hmm. A green armoire, some form of green couch, a lamp, perhaps.
No, it'll be a green light bulb.
Let's be honest, like the purpose of the crystal is that, okay, like, and I talked about this in the mutiny and I'll actually talk about in the next episode after this one, is that the green candle is really the source of the powers. The crystal, and this is just my understanding, even though it's really never been described.
You sure know how to suck all the fun out of a joke, don't you, Mike?
I love you too, Ben. But, the crystal really is there to absorb the powers so that way they can harness it.
Right. But green candle, green crystal, like just
pick one and let it end. Yeah. Well, this goes back to like they really dragged this out.
Green headphones.
There you go. Like the entire concept of Tommy losing his powers has been going on for so long. At this point, like
yeah, but like yes, we get a bit close, but my point was like it's just Tommy's powers interact with another thing.
Yeah.
Just have him cast a spell or do a science thing or
throw a stick at it
or something.
Throw a stick.
I don't know.
He can zap it with his staff.
Just hit him on the head real hard so he forgets everything. Like, and then there's a moment where it's like Tommy's in the command center and Zordon's like, the one thing is significant is that even though you were in the middle of battle, you weren't in your Green Ranger costume. And Tommy's like, without my powers, how can I ever win? I'm like, it's like you haven't been paying attention for the last year and a half.
Also, there's a really
all the time.
There's a really funny bit in this scene. I found it funny, at least, where, like, because Tommy had a bio scan and he's waiting for the results that are going to be available the next day. And then the bio scan results just, like, print out on a computer. And I just pictured that scene from My Cousin Vinny. We're like, this computer readout confirms that.
My biological clock is ticking.
Best movie. No, it's just like, I'm like, it's one of those moments where you remember how much technology has changed. I'm like, why is it print? It took me a second. I'm like, why is it printing out the results?
Oh.
You have a view screen. Like, come on.
It's supposed to be like the bridge of the Enterprise, guys. Come on. Like, you're dependent on paper?
Yeah, seriously. Like, come on. Get with the times. If Star Trek can do it, you can.
The next step here is... This was bound to come up, right? The teens are at the beach. And Kimberly says, I just spoke to Trini, who's staying with her grandmother. This, even though it's been going on for a couple of episodes at this point, this was the first real plot-heavy episode to be affected by the falling out with Saban that Austin, Walter, and Twi Trang had, right? As they'd stopped turning up for ADR, which is why all of their Ranger dialogue in this one is taken from other episodes, right? And Trini barely appears, right? She pops into the command center later, right? I can't speak to this as someone who came to this recently because I kind of knew it was coming, right? How did that feel when it started happening when you were watching it originally?
So, as a kid, you really kind of don't notice it as much because, like, we're 8 years old. Or 7 years old or whatever. So like, we don't really, like, we're not really capable of noticing those type of changes right away. But like, but when you watch it back later, knowing what we end up knowing, we can then kind of piece the things together. Like, okay, well, it didn't make sense to me as a kid then, but watching it back now, I can see why certain things were happening. Like, this is why Trini didn't show up until this part. This is why in the power transfer, which we'll get to later, you know, Jason and Zach and Trini sound off a bit and we don't physically see them outside of the suits. So it's like, it starts making sense up to that point of power transfer when it does happen, you know, when you're older. But like when we were younger, it was just like, oh, we're just getting new Rangers, you know, these three are going off to do something else and these three are coming in to replace them. That's how it kind of looked like as a kid watching.
And having watched it in Russian dub, and this is the first time watching in English, like in the Russian dub, you don't notice it because there's no awkward voice to splice together because somebody else is doing the voiceover for that character.
Right. That's a good
point. So I didn't notice it at all watching it as a kid, though I found it funny that the entire point of the dialogue that Kimberly states goes from, Trini is over at her grandmother's and she's worried about Tommy too. Like, yeah, you're all teammates. Of course she's worried. Why is, like,
Trini getting a surprise?
Right.
You jealous?
But it's like Mike said, though, like, now you notice those threads and you're able to, it just, like, didn't come up as a kid.
Brian?
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because, like, I might have been a little bit older than you, but I didn't notice it either, even though watching it back, it's very noticeable and very obvious that there's something going on behind the scenes. But watching it, I just figured that, like, oh, well, yeah, of course she's at her grandma's house. I go to my grandma's house all the time. Why is that weird?
You have to remember that everyone in Trini's family is a world-famous scientist and martial artist. Especially her uncle.
Mm.
So grandma's at a karate tournament and she's winning first place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I accept that headcanon.
Johnny.
And that's the thing. It's like, as a kid, you know, and Brian, if I remember right, I think I'm older than you by just a few years.
Possibly. What year were you born again?
86.
Yeah, you're 1 year older than me.
Yeah, so it's like I was probably 8, you were probably 7 when this was happening.
Yeah.
You know, like, and Brian just said it, you know, like, they used the excuse of Trini was visiting her grandmother. And every time we heard more and more about some of these excuses, like, why they're away, we're just like, okay, they're just off doing different things, so you don't also notice it at the same time. Although there is one moment though in the last episode that you and I did together, Ben, the Guitardo episode, where, you know, even when they're all together doing the picnic,
yeah,
when Jason speaks, it's really not Austin St. John talking. That's a dub over, and that's and you're literally looking at Austin St. John. So, and of course, for like Brian and I, we wouldn't notice something like that when we're 8, 7 years old. It's something we would notice later on when we rewatch the show, when we see that.
Yeah.
So
I just thought it would be an interesting thing to chat about, because
yeah,
it's so blatant to me, like, watching it now. I guess you didn't have all the information back then either with what was going on and that.
No.
Yeah, because, like, the dirt sheets then were, like, strictly, like, in Hollywood, and you didn't have it, like, on the internet like you do now with everything at this point.
And even if there were dirt sheets like that available, again, we were, like, 7 and 8. Why would we, you know, like, especially since the internet wasn't a thing and it wasn't something that was readily accessible, why would that be something that would interest me? It's kind of like with wrestling where, like, you would, like, kayfabe was still a thing and it was still protected. Yeah. So, like, you know, you don't need to know about all the stuff going on in the back because we're just trying to get you a product. And
kids often miss the nuances that adults pick up on just because of experience and viewership and things like that. So I would say there might be one, like, super clever 8-year-old that is like, Trini sounds kind of funny, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not uncommon, but also it's like, generally it's like, I'll go with it. As long as I get more episodes of that Power Ranger show I like, it's okay.
Am I right in thinking this was the final U2 show?
Yes.
I'll control if it was this one or if it was the one
off. Let me take a closer look here at the notes.
That's actually one of the questions I was going to ask Brian, was like, can you tell us which was Die Ranger, what was Ranger in Jew 2.
Okay, so I actually pulled this from from the Ranger Wiki. It says, this is the 25th and final ZO2 episode produced for the show. Rumors have circulated that there was a 26th ZO2 episode featuring the Python monster, which was made into a toy, but never made a show appearance, and that's neither really been confirmed. Also, talking about Turbine Shell. Turbine Shell's footage when small was made exclusively in America and is technically not ZO2 since it was filmed only as a giant in Japan and they merely shipped the shoot over here. So all that footage where he's fighting Tommy, that's all American made, obviously. But they never filmed him, you know, fighting the Rangers because he, I guess that was just stuff that they wanted to film over here. Yeah. So. And then after that, we start getting way more dependent on American suit footage and Die Ranger footage.
Yeah, because that was definitely something that I was curious about, because I knew that there was going to be that cutting off point where they completely moved away from G-Ranger and just focused on American and Die Ranger specifically at that point. I just wasn't sure. I couldn't remember where that cutting off point was.
Right.
For it. So. And that was here.
I was here.
You've so reached your destination.
Can we talk about the monster yet?
Yes.
Yeah, because I have one gripe with him, or I guess with the writing of this episode because of him. Uh-huh. There's a point where, like, he leaves the battle right where he has the Power Rangers exactly where he wants them, and he's, like, about to defeat them. And we get this, like, 30-second scene of him going to Zed, and Zed is like, what do you mean you just left the Rangers when you were about to, you know, kill them? Go back down there. Dude, he's like, oh, oops, sorry. I'm like, what was the point?
He said that he had to recharge his shell. That was the excuse that he was using. The excuse that he used was that he had to recharge his shell so he can finish off the Rangers. And then Zed was like, I don't care if you need to recharge your shell.
I quite liked this because it set Zed up for when he lets the Rangers go later to be like, well, I just did the same thing I told him not to do. It was kind of I quite like that, but yeah.
Don't, because I feel like it's just wasting time. Well,
it's an absolute waste of time, don't get me wrong, but I don't know, it's not the worst sin that this episode perpetrates.
That's fair.
Flashback to the beach scene from, sorry, carry on, Brian.
I was just gonna say something funny, whereas like this is the equivalent of like, it's like a two-parter that should have been a one-parter, aka this is a meeting that should have been an email. Where, you know,
we didn't need the email chain. This could have all been done in just one big email.
Yeah.
Forget, oh, it's the 90s, it's email, but like this could have been a text message. Actually, you know what? This could have been a beeper message.
Pager.
Yeah.
Pagers, so, there you go.
And so
the thing about the what I came to call the anti-Rangers, which are like the five teens before they become the evil Rangers. The Dark Rangers, I suppose they're called.
Yeah, that's what they're called.
They would have come across as more of a massive threat if at any point the Rangers took them seriously, right? Every time the two teams meet, all of like the actual Rangers have these looks on their faces like, these guys are comedians, right? Like, they're just literally laughing at them, right? They're not intimidated at all.
I mean, look at Billy in that shirt he was wearing. He would probably take out all five by himself.
Literally, in my notes, I say, the anti-Rangers would have been more of a threat even if they were, like, the five Rangers weren't even looking at them like they were three-year-olds. Like, Kim could dunk on these fools.
Yeah.
Also, when they square up at the beach, the blue anti-ranger barely knows how to make a fist. Frankly, Billy could dunk on these fools.
Pretty much.
And it was so lame, too, because, like, all of a sudden he shows, like, they show up, and, like, they're making fun of Kim for digging up a shell at the beach. And I'm like, okay, I guess you needed a way to get into that conversation and like be, you know, be mean or whatever,
like
whatever, but
I do like that this one of the shells she digs up is the turban shell.
Yeah.
Shell. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But can we talk about the name turban shell?
Sure.
Where do you wear a turban?
On your head. And it's,
where is the shell?
We don't need spread. To.
Where is the shell?
On its bootay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This name makes sense how, and it's not just slightly racist. Oh, wait, it is just slightly racist. It's enormously racist.
Yeah. Sasha, by the way, I noticed a scene where Turban Shell leaves the scene by splitting into a bunch of smaller shells, and it reminded me of Spider's Man.
Yeah.
Sasha's but, just giving you, for the record, Sasha's just giving Ben a look of what?
You don't know what?
Spider-Man?
No, Spider's Man. The weird off-world version of Spider-Man that's made up of tiny spiders that turns into a Spider-Man.
We can stop explaining this now.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a Spider-Verse anyways. Thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a thing that I blocked out of my mind. Thanks, Brian.
You're very welcome, Sasha.
And so the five teens are teleported from the beach to appear in front of Lord Zedd. He says, welcome to my other world, a.k.a. the same a.k.a. the same quarry and cave we always use.
They could have at least like put like a sepia tone on it or something to like make it look different. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, but yeah. Also, can we talk about the fact that the Dark Avenger costumes look like you ordered them on Wish for $2 and this is what you got thinking you'd get this like Power Ranger suit?
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that line that I used again? I used the line of, where is it? The worst looking after school rejects money can buy.
I like my version better. But like, it's also kind of sad that like, I was expecting like at least a fight with these evil Rangers.
Yeah.
But here's what we don't get. We don't get a fight with these evil Rangers.
Nope.
And we also don't really get a good reason of why they're joining Lord Zedd. It's more of like, he promised us his loyalty. I'm like, and no? What does that
I got the feeling from the way that they were acting when they showed up, that they were like hypnotized or something. But that might have just been really bad acting.
That was really bad acting.
Because if they wanted to like make that known, they could have used a different line, like "We serve at the pleasure of Lord Zedd," letting us.
Yeah.
Like,
well, not only that, my control. Not only that, but like when the five bullies are first introduced, Zedd openly says, "I like the attitude of these five. These could be my Dark Rangers." So they're definitely not under a spell. It's definitely bad acting on that part. So,
well, my final note for this episode is those costumes. What are those? Sorry.
So I do have a couple more notes. I have Dork Rangers are useless.
Well, I mean, that was for part one. I mean, I got more.
I'm sorry. This is Dark Rangers, not Dork Rangers. Same thing. But I do find it funny that there's like that scene where Tommy's like inside the monster and he's just like shooting at it.
Oh, we'll get to that at the end of episode two. We're still at the end of episode one.
Oh, okay, my bad.
I've got another page and a bit of notes before then. What you got, Brian?
When we're talking, we're still talking about episode one.
Tail end of episode one, yeah.
So, like, I don't know. The last thing I wrote was, okay, Tommy is powerless and left to hide as the other Rangers are trapped while the Dark Rangers are planning to deconstruct the world any minute now.
It does take them a long time to get into action, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, just do something. Also, the turban shell sucked the Green Ranger's powers up with his butt in this episode, didn't he?
Yes. He used the shell on his butt to absorb the powers into the crystal.
Yeah. And one last little just comment I had to say about this, it really goes nowhere, but like Tommy gets kind of weak when he gets transferred over to that area, and he winds up in the wheat field from the beginning of Gladiator, it looks like. Like, he just wakes up in a wheat field. I'm like, okay.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah. At least they used a different place.
Yeah.
And that's a key thing, because, like, you know, like we talked about, like, Lord Zedd's Otherworld is the exact same cave that Rita was using.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So it's like the fact that they put, and instead of putting Tommy in that chamber, that dungeon in the palace, yeah, like they did a lot in season one, putting him in this random wheat field and calling that the other world and changing like the tinting of the lighting was actually a good touch for it, because it actually made it feel so different compared to what we've been used to seeing before.
I'll agree with that, because it was definitely like you really hadn't seen them fighting in a wheat field before, and I was like, well, I mean, why not take a page out of like Superman's book, I guess. I don't know.
Since we're on to the fight in the wheat field, a very interesting note is that in Green Candle, right, Tommy can hold his own against Goldar.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Without powers.
But he is getting handled by Turban Shell. Like, he's getting handled by Turban Shell easily. And it's an interesting note on the fighting prowess of the two, one might say.
Well, one could also say that when it comes to...
And another nice little... Another what I consider is a very unintentional but yet nice piece of continuity is I love the fact that Zedd could use a ranger's power to seal the command center off, because you have to have a ranger's power to enter the command center.
Yeah. That was a nice bit.
I quite like that. It probably completely unintentional once again, but
yeah, which makes like Zordon's line about, you know, only a non-ranger can get into the other world, because, you know, the whole Power Rangers thing.
Also, a nice piece of unintentional continuity here is the fact that the field is shrinking and contracting and threatening the command center. Maybe what provokes Zordon and Alpha to get the underground command center that they use from ZO onwards.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a great moment where Billy's like, I might be able to find a way through the field back in my lab. And I'm like, why not just fly there in the rad bug?
The what?
remember that thing?
Oh, yeah.
That thing that appeared in like two episodes and we never saw it again. Yeah. Also, one thing is I don't know if this at that point was like the inexperience of the actors or the cringy dialogue or what it was, or maybe it's just because I can't stand Tommy, but like Kim and Tommy in this episode are just like, I can't be bothered. They're just kind of cringy.
Well, aren't they supposed to be dating at this point already?
Yes.
They are, there, but they don't even talk about it anymore.
There is no chemistry between them.
Zero.
But going back though, real quick, because you're talking about like the Turban Shell Goldar differential for Tommy's fighting them. With Tommy, like, he had some powers to him when fighting Goldar. So even without the powers at this point now, he at least had the familiarity on how to fight
Goldar. But then when he fights Goldar later in this very episode, he can fight Goldar.
But that's what I'm saying. He has that familiarity of how Goldar fights, so he knows how to actually fight Goldar. Whereas when he fights Turban Shell, he doesn't have that same familiarity as like he has with Goldar. Because he's fought Goldar so many times. He knows how to fight Goldar without the powers. Whereas with an actual monster, it's just not there, you know, that familiarity, because you don't know how the monster would react in certain instances in a fight.
On the other hand, it doesn't really look like Goldar tries to put up much of a fight.
It's those wings.
Maybe.
I quite like, there was the sequence where Goldar was showing Tommy all of his past successes and things like that, right? And being like, it's all gone now. You don't have it anymore. I quite like that because in my sick and twisted brain, it was Goldar being like, well, he beat me up before, so I'm going to try a psychological attack.
And it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. If anything, it motivated
him. It's just there to pad the runtime, let's be honest.
Well, also keep in mind, this could have, like, this could conceivably have been the last time we legitimately would ever see the Tommy character.
If only.
Only.
Yeah. And, like, you know, as we've seen.
Sasha, Jinx.
Jinx.
And as we've seen with, you know, later on things, like with clip, like they would show like clips of Rangers before they would leave. So this was probably the first time that they're trying to do that, but because of the popularity of the character amongst the audience, you know, he ended up coming back. So.
I wonder if you had put a stick and given it the same arc as Tommy, would it have gained the same amount of popularity?
Like, you could literally replace Tommy Oliver with a chair in most scenes.
That's what I mean.
My next note is Billy's lab is on screen. I'll just go ahead and preemptively write that's not how science works now.
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
Get it out of the way.
I actually like how they showed, like, the outside of the house for once.
I do that Billy. A bit in season one.
Yeah, but, like, this one, it felt more noticeable that they showed, like, they actually showed the actual house, not, like, the outside of the garage looking in type deal.
Mm.
And, like, because they actually showed, like, the entire house, and then they went into the garage. And that was kind of, like, a little refreshing because it's, like, a different... Because one of the things I've noticed is that they've been trying to do different shots of, like, the youth center and Angel Grove High. They've been trying to, like now they have that aerial shot of the youth center juice bar before they actually go into it now. So they've been trying to insert different views to mix it up a little.
It could just be a different director or a different cameraman as well.
Yeah.
But
either way, it's still good that they change up the shots a bit. You're not getting the same shot over and over like you did season one.
So Goldar is planning to send Tommy into space. Why not just do it?
Seriously.
Or put him in a dumpster. Dumpster Tommy.
Yeah. He'll
be back.
He come back like Rita. I'm free. Time to take over Power Rangers again.
You know, Tommy's kind of like a gift that you re-gift and then somebody re-gifts it back. And each time you try to get rid of it, it just keeps coming back. And every time, it's worse. But,
And then out of nowhere, he's like, oh, I'm going to do it with this time device, right? I'm like, that's just an excuse to make the first part of the first episode make sense, isn't it? But then you don't pay off the time loop, so.
Yeah.
Paradox? How can Tommy teleport out of the other world when the command center is still sealed?
Well, see, that's the interesting thing, because it's like, if you look at the message in the beginning,
right,
future Tommy just says communicator,
right? Yeah, carry on. It should be good.
So then you have this Tommy now in the future.
Yeah,
I think he goes to past Tommy, and this time it's like you said, the paradox.
Yeah.
Instead of him saying I need like something about a communicator, this Tommy acknowledges, I got your message about the communicator. Here it is. Because apparently maybe they might have done something that off screen to make the communicator work in the other world.
That is, I have to think of a word that is safe for this show. That is all levels of backwards, awful, mental gymnastics on the part of the audience to try and make the flaws of the writers work.
The only thing I could possibly think of is because of where Tommy's communicator was and he didn't have it, maybe Zed used that as a way to entrap the it's still mental gymnastics, but entrap the command center so that when Tommy used his communicator, it freed the, I don't know.
I've
had a long week. I don't know.
Down the barrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the result of Tommy being able to then use the communicator, his communicator, and get to Billy and the others, that's when magically the breakthrough happens, and they can talk to Alpha at this point now.
Hey, look at that. I figured it out.
No, you didn't.
No.
Because we really don't know.
I'm still confused.
The show doesn't explain anything.
That is not how writing works.
Yeah. No, it's true. There shouldn't be these 5,000 word puzzles that we need to 5,000 piece puzzles that we need to figure out to make a tiny little plot point fit. But again, this goes to something we said earlier. This is a show for 8-year-olds. They think they don't have to try.
Right. They're wrong.
They are wrong, but that does not stop them from not trying.
One of the interesting things is, and Brian, and you can hop in on this too, because, you know, one of the interesting things when we were at Power Morphicon,
mm-hmm.
when we're walking around, was not just the number of adults our age going up to people like Austin and the original casting, thank you for doing the show, you know, it helped me get through all this other stuff, but it's kind of amazing about how a lot of them still stuck through it up to where we are today.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of introduced it to their children and stuff like that, because, you know, that's one of the interesting things about this. It's even through all the flaws of this show, when we watched it when we were 6, 7, 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
to now, we're still talking about it, you know. And that's kind of one of the weird things, and it's just something that came to my mind now, as we're talking about this, with the writing and stuff like that. And it's just one of those things where it's you know, it's funny because before Beast Morphers, the current season that's airing right now,
right,
you know, there was always the adult fans who were day wonders like us that would just still pick apart everything, and where we joke about it on here, it's we're a bunch of adults talking to take it too seriously about a kid show.
Yeah.
And you kind of see the parallel of how it went, you know, from where it was then to where it is now.
At the same time, while yes, there are some things that I think we have to acknowledge that this is a show for kids and all that jazz, but at the same time, we should demand more from our children's televisions. Look at key point, Avatar: The Last Airbender. My brother was 7 years old when that show aired. He freaking loved it. And, you know, a show can be, whether it's live action or animated, can be complex, can have a good story. And if it has good writing and good animation and a good balance of action and character-driven story, then, it's going to entrap the adults and the kids. And probably better that it entraps the adults, because they have to suffer through it while the kid is watching it.
Right.
No, go ahead, Brian.
Well, what I was going to say is, it's funny because this very conversation is kind of why Hasbro is doing the things that they're doing right now with the franchise as a whole. Because, as you know, they're starting to build up towards, obviously, Dino Fury is coming out soon, and then they're going to do a new movie that's going to, you know, interlope with the TV shows, and they're going to try and do all these different projects for adults and kids. And I feel like shows like Avatar: The Last Airbender, and there's been this revolution in animation, like shows like Steven Universe and, you know, She-Ra and stuff like that, where Power Rangers could absolutely benefit from writing like that, because those shows pay so close attention to what they're trying to do, and they set these little threads up, even like the first episode, that pay off. And I feel like hopefully we're going to get that with Power Rangers going forward, but to expect that from a show that happened in 1993 was asking honestly way too much, I think, because it was a quote unquote dumb kid show that we're going to put out and try and make as much money as possible.
Yeah. Nope. I'm going to disagree with that. I'm sorry. Case in point, X-Men, the animated series.
Well, and not only that, but
case in point, Batman the animated series. Like,
yeah. Well, yes, I think the thing is though is that we're talking about two different mediums here. We're talking about X-Men and Batman that are comics that have long been established, that have a lot of source material that they can work off of. Whereas with Power Rangers coming over here, yes, there is source material, but it's from Japan, so they're actually making all this up. Plus, as we talked about, they did 60 episodes in season one when it was only supposed to be like 30-something.
So they're making it all up, so they have the opportunity to do it right the first time?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, I think at this point, because Fox wanted so many episodes, you know, okay. And wanted more episodes than they probably could produce at a time. Like, look how many filler episodes we got.
But they also could have adapted Sentai plots, which they do which I don't know to what degree they do that this season. Brian can chime in on that, but
not very.
Yeah.
Okay. This season they didn't really do it. Okay, so then this is a case of them going independent after last season, maybe relying more on the Sentai plots and threads. So maybe that's part of it, but I still think that, like, it's okay to set a bar and acknowledge what episodes are really well written and really well done, which there are, and the episodes that are very clearly like this one that are okay.
Yeah,
but they're not gonna
you can put all the excuses you want, you can use all the reasoning you want, you can use all the ifs, ands, or buts that you want.
Yeah.
But just because a show is targeted at children doesn't mean you should treat them like they're stupid.
Yeah.
Fair.
To paraphrase the comedian Mitch Hedberg, every show is a kid's show if the kid can watch TV.
That is true.
Valid.
Yeah, and also
my,
like,
childhood right there.
And then also going back to the one point about the Sentai for, like, stories and the Sentai that can be adapted over here, I don't think we really see that again on a more regular basis until we get to season 3 of Mighty Morphin with Kaku Ranger.
Mm-hmm. And I think the first time that they really did that with a season was Time Force.
You mean where they adapt the Sentai straight?
Yeah,
they literally, like, they did American Actors, but they took pretty much that entire plot thread and they went, we're going to do this pretty much beat for beat.
Yeah.
They added in some new stuff, but, like, they went beat for beat with, like, a lot of the stories.
There's a lot of similarities in Lightspeed Rescue as well. Mm-hmm. Sorry to bring up my favorite show, but since it's relevant to the conversation.
Yeah.
There are a lot of similarities to the Sentai in Lightspeed Rescue, but it's not to the extent there are in Time Force.
Right.
Not even close.
Well, it all depends on who's in charge, who's writing the show, and who's writing the plots.
Yep.
And speaking of writing, I think it was this episode. I did want to point this out when it came up. This episode was written by someone called Stuart St. John and directed by someone called John Stewart. I just found that amusing.
So go back to the actual plot of this episode, otherwise we will keep talking forever and ever.
Yeah.
They defeat Turtle Shell. Unless there's people have other notes.
My only noting is he's getting ready to deploy the Zords, the Dark Rangers, as Tommy's breaking the crystal, and he's saying to the Dark Rangers, "Your Zords are ready," but then we never see those Zords, and it's a complete tease, and I hate it.
Yeah, I actually had just a few brief notes too that I wanted to mention myself.
Go for it.
So about the whole force field thing with Zed, this is what I had to write. I said, wait, so Zed's force field is compressing around the command center, and if it gets to a certain point, the center will implode. Then that means, oh no, the Rangers. Honestly, to get graphics, Zed could just be done with the Rangers that way, but then we wouldn't have a show, the parents would be upset, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Adding on to that, I paused the episode to type that, and literally in the next scene, Goldar asks if he can crush the Rangers. So I'm not the only person who thought of that, and Zed says, absolutely not. I'm sending them back to Earth. And this is why Zed never wins.
Yeah.
Because that is the dumbest thing. It's like, you have them right there.
Yeah, he literally does what he told Turbine Shell earlier in the episode not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I put something in here about Turbine Shell keeps getting called a worm, but isn't he technically a mollusk?
Yes.
And
but remember, they are taking all of their lines while they're morphed from other episodes.
Right. Fair.
Because the people that keep calling him a worm are Zach and Jason.
Fair. And the last really big thing I had here was, at this point, there's only 9 minutes left in the episode, but they go from Zordon saying, the green crystal must be destroyed to get your powers back, and only a non-ranger can go undetected, to Tommy literally showing up and breaking the thing within 15 seconds, which was, like, one of the most breakneck scenes in watching this.
He just teleports in, like, next to the crystal.
And nobody notices. Like, he could have been in and out without a problem if he didn't stop to go, neener, neener.
Yeah, like there was a point where I was like, oh man, how is he gonna, because there was enough time left in the episode because I paused it, and I was like, oh man, how is he gonna do that? And like, before I could even say that sentence in my mind,
broken the crystal.
He's already broken the crystal. I was like, what happened? So.
There's also this moment when they're in the final fight with Turbine Shell, where Zordon's like, oh, Tommy, by the way, if you want to kill this thing, you got to get et.
Yeah.
Like it's the first time the Rangers have to go inside a monster, or up inside a monster.
Yeah. Also, by the way, here's this gun that we're never actually going to give you, but like once you're inside the stomach, it'll just kind of show up.
Also,
and we'll never see it again.
He only ever tells Tommy the plan, right? So Tommy gets eaten by the thing, goes inside, starts shooting it with this heat laser thing, and then the others are like, oh, now we've got to make it cold. I'm like, he didn't tell you that.
But what's better is that after they defeat Turbine Shell and Tommy comes back, he hands the gun to Billy and goes, this is a great invention, Billy.
Someone forgot to shoot that shot, didn't they?
Oh my god,
there's also the moment like where he's made him really, really hot, and then Zach's like, let me chill this worm off. And shoots him with a normal size fire hose. Now, I'm getting the idea that it was probably supposed to be the Mastodon Zord in the footage, but because they can't use the Mastodon Zord because they've already got the Thunder Zords, right?
Oh yeah! Wow. Okay.
He just picks up with it. Like,
that's something that was literally probably just lost in translation, where they were just like, oh yeah, he's obviously gonna freeze the thing with the Mastodon, and they're just like, no, wait, we're not using that anymore. Oh, okay, so hold on.
You give him a hose.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Oh man, I hadn't thought of that. I really and- like.
Still not the weirdest thing that ever happened in Power Rangers.
Oh, no.
No. What was that What was that time when they got baked into a pizza?
That's the
Turbo.
Best. That is the best episode of Power Rangers I've ever seen.
Nice.
I'm lying.
Yeah.
It is legitimately my favorite episode of Turbo, though.
So they defeat the monster, and I guess then they're back at the juice bar with the... where they see the anti-rangers, and their conclusion is like, oh, they just don't have friends.
Yeah, they do, each other.
Right, so confused. They spent the entire episode like glued to each other, but they're like mean and bullies because they don't have friends. I mean, I guess there's like 2 minutes left, like a minute left in the episode, and you need to wrap it up, but come on.
The power of friendship prevails over all.
Also, can we talk about the fact that they bought five sodas and it cost them $4.50?
Wow.
Man, I wish we had those prices still.
What does the math equate to on that?
I mean, well,
Well,
They bought five sodas, right?
Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, it is Ernie, and Ernie does like to give the discounts to Jason and the gang, so.
But Jason is the one that ordered them. He just pays for it. It's Richie that tells them how much the drinks are. And Richie isn't going to be that nice to them. He's not obligated to.
Yeah.
So 90 cents for a drink.
That's well, maybe in the early 90s it was like that.
No.
The one thing that's actually quite notable about the end of Green No More is, unlike Green Candle, we never actually see Tommy lose his powers. We see him morphed in the fight, and then the next time we see him, he's unmorphed in the command center.
Yeah.
But we're just sort of told, whoops, that's it.
Well, I mean, and it was kind of made known at the beginning. It's like, you got one battle left.
Right, but it, like, you would at least like to have that.
Like, it would have been cool to see the fade out of the green suit and everything.
You know how, like, in Green Candle, where he hands the coin over to Jason?
Right. Yeah. He's got that, like, coin, and he's just like, oh, no.
It would have just been nice to have a little bit of finality, like a full stop.
There's a lack of, like, this is the end of the Green Ranger kind of a situation.
Yeah.
Maybe cut out the thing with the five bullies, or at least shorten it up a little bit. Yeah. And then you could probably have that at the command center, or I don't know. But
man, if you'd only cut the entire Dark Ranger storyline,
which literally went nowhere.
Yeah.
It made for one good moment.
Also, there's this line that Tommy says in the command center about, like, oh, well, we're going on school break. So I'm like, when does this take place?
Didn't school just start?
Right? I am so confused.
And also, bet me that there's somebody listening to this, and they're just like, well, you know, those Dark Rangers never really did anything, but I'd buy a 5-pack of lighting figures of those guys. Like,
Lightspeed Rescue!
I know. I sent you that link for Google 5 figures.
That's not the point, dude.
The point is
we're getting Ranger team after Ranger team after Ranger team, and we're getting repeats from Ranger teams now, and we don't even have a single Lightspeed Rescue Ranger in the Lightning Collection yet.
Yeah. That is kind of... I think they're focusing mainly on Zeo and Dino Thunder right this second.
Yeah, they are.
Because you're getting Ethan.
Yeah.
Right? Well, you've already got Connor, but there's literally no Lightspeed Rescue members in, and I don't know whether it's a legal thing or what, but for some reason there's just no Lightspeed Rescue Lightning Collection figures, and it's annoying.
That doesn't make sense. There was no drastic change because they have Time Force and they have Lost Galaxy.
Hasbro owns all of them, so
yeah,
like anything that's Power Rangers has been done, they own it all.
Because there's Mighty Morphin toys, there's Zeo toys, there's Turbo toys, there's In Space toys, there's Lost Galaxy toys, there's Time Force toys.
We haven't gotten Turbo yet in the Lightning Collection, I will say that.
There's a Tommy Turbo, isn't there?
Nope, not yet.
No, I think they did the Phantom Ranger.
And I feel like if they're going to do a red Turbo Ranger, they would probably want to do that as a two-pack with TJ, right? Because then you can do that. You can do that turbo body, but then also the In Space body too.
So with that in mind, because I think we've gone off kilter and off topic,
Sorry. No way.
That like, there's really not much else to say about this episode that hasn't already been said.
Yeah.
Now my favorite episode. Yes.
So with that.
All I'll say is there are worse episodes.
That's fair.
Like, that is fair. They at least, and you have to understand, this is the end of a 7-episode arc, right? So taking this just by itself is kind of like only reading the last chapter of a book. So take that for what you will.
Yeah. So with that, we'll start with you, Sasha. Where can the people find you on the social medias?
All right. It is geekgirl101.tumblr.com. Yes, I'm on Tumblr. Yes, I suffer. I am Geeky Captain on Instagram. I am Geeky Kaplan with a K on Twitter, where I rant about all things comic book and MCU related. At Geek and geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com, where I write comic book reviews, and of course on this website /nerdy-notions. See, I remember to say it now.
Yep. Nice.
And then Ben, where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can just find me crying in a corner awaiting Lightspeed Rescue Toys.
Okay. Sounds good.
No, you can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find the sister show to Voices from the Grid, Awesome Mania, where Mike and I discuss the ongoing activities in the world of pro wrestling in a very not safe for work manner, over at
the website /AwesomeMania.
You can find the Twitter for Voices from the Grid at
VFTG_PR.
And you can, I'm not going to go into the whole thing about why I'm not writing columns right now, but when I do start them again, you can find them at
the website at /Ben's-Journey.
And you can find me doing the video game thing over at
twitch.tv/@ 321_TV. Sorry, uh-huh. There's two Twitches uh-huh. that get promoted on here.
Right. Okay.
Sorry, that's 321.
Well, maybe you should promote yours, Mike.
Yeah. It's 321_TV for Ben. Brian, where can the people find you?
You can find me at castwavestudios.com, where myself, Colin, and I'm having such a brain fart right now. Wow.
Sean.
I forgot Sean's name. I haven't seen that dude in forever. Me, Colin, and Sean do Bully Going Nowhere. You can also check out One Drink Geek and a bunch of other shows that are free to listen to. You can find me on Twitter at One Drunk Geek. I review craft beer and haven't done an episode in a little bit, but there's plenty of stuff for you to watch there as well. And then also on Instagram at Draken22. Right, and Mike, where can we find you on the worldwide Wonder Boobs?
Twitter at TheLindenbaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions. Obviously, the website as always. And on Twitch at twitch.tv/MichaelX75, where I go live Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Just look at the schedule, it'll tell you what I'm playing. So with that, Ben, take us away.
As we sit here, bidding adieu to Tommy Oliver for 3 episodes, at least 2 of the 4 of us have a song in our heart. That being me and Sasha, in case you hadn't guessed. And I will say, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, justice for life to be rescued. And be excellent to each other. And party on non-gender-specific honorifics.
And once again, until we see each other once again, grab your power coins and your power morphers.
And may the power protect you.
Na 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 na. Hey, hey, hey. Goodbye.